May it please the court, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Berger. I'm Jared Green from Sykes Van Ogtrop and Green. I represent Joe Julian and JJID in this matter. This is an appeal, as the court is aware, from a grant of summary judgment in favor of DelDOT in awarding a contract to Mumford & Miller as opposed to my client, JJID. This case, while the opinion of the lower court premises its logic mostly on this new steel versus old steel issue, I'd like to stress that that is not what this case is about.
Is that even an issue in this case on appeal?
It is, Your Honor, because that's the whole purpose of the opinion. It becomes an issue because that was not, it should not have been relevant because it is an immaterial part of this bid.
Okay, well, let me, just before you start, help me understand your argument. I've read your brief several times, looked at your summary of argument. My impression is that the issue you want to talk about in this appeal is this painting certificate. Is that correct?
Partially, Your Honor.
All right, so just tell me 1, 2, 3, the issues you've raised on appeal, and then maybe where I can find them in your brief. But let's start with the issues you've raised on appeal.
The issue on appeal is, one, that our bid was responsive. Two, that that DelDOT, in awarding the bid to Mumford & Miller, exercised no discretion as they are required to do, and they acted arbitrarily and capriciously in using no rational fact-gathering and decision-making process. And third, that New Steel is a minimal part of this bid and should have been disregarded. And further, because the rejection was premised only on this painting issue, the certificate issue, that New Steel never becomes a part of the rejection and shouldn't have been considered.
All right, so let me tell you my difficulty, and maybe we can just put it to rest at the beginning. I look at the Court of Chancery's decision, and it makes alternate holdings, one based on the paint certificate, one based on New Steel. I look at your brief, I'm having trouble finding where you've raised the New Steel issue in your brief fully and fairly. And if you haven't fully and fairly raised New Steel in your brief, then basically you haven't contested the New Steel ruling, which was an independent basis not to award the bid, and your appeal's over because there were two bases for the ruling in the Court of Chancery, New Steel and the painting certificate, and you're only attacking one on appeal. So tell me what I've missed.
I disagree with that, Your Honor, because what we're attacking on appeal is the ruling that our bid was non-responsive, and what that encompasses is both the certificate and the New Steel idea. And this New Steel idea, as well as the certificate, these comprise a very minute portion of this overall job. And a point that I'd like to make before the court, and that got missed both in the lower court and in counsel's summary judgment briefs, etc., that's not an issue of not raising it. It's just a factual issue that's in the record. This is a small job, this bridge job. As the lower court refers to it in its grant of summary judgment, it calls it the Mill Creek Bridge job, is its term for this job. That's not what this job is. This is the Northeast Corridor Improvements Yard to Regan job. That job is 1.7 miles of improvements of railroad. The Mill Creek Bridge, which is a small portion of that job, is 54 feet. Now that's 8,976 feet of construction that JJID bid on, 54 feet of which is this bridge. Now, my math on that is that comes to 0.3%. And under the case law, if it's less than 2%, it is not a material part of the bid and can be overlooked and should be overlooked because the overarching purpose of these statutes is to save taxpayer money. So, had this process, hypothetically, let me back up, had this process gone as follows. JJID bids as everyone else. Dell Dot sees this bid for $700,000 less. They say, okay, why is it $700,000 less? It's this one painting certificate. They look to see what the painting certificate is about. It's really not that important. They say, oh, we should do our best to save taxpayers money and look for loopholes, you know, not loopholes, look for ways to enforce the purpose of the statute and award the bid to JJID, as opposed to just going, tough, we called it material. Our word is the be all end all, that's the end of it, you're rejected. That's not the overarching purpose of this. And furthermore, had they done that, and Mumford and Miller opposed the awarding of the bid to JJID, then the case is identical to Bader. There would be no difference had they awarded the contract and then Mumford and Miller opposed that award. And the principle behind Bader, Harmony, Dell Tech, all of these cases, the decision of Dell Dot is upheld because they use their discretion in a manner that saved money for the taxpayers. In this case, the opposite has happened. They use no discretion, and the affidavits of James Hoagland and Godfrey, they said, you know, was that a factor in your decision making? No. In the Harmony case by then Vice Chancellor Jacobs, he says if it's the primary purpose is to protect public funds, and if you make a determination that is not protecting public funds, you must have a rational fact-gathering and decision-making process.
Let me ask you this question. I will concede to you at the outset that this is not an area of the law in which I would call myself an expert. So I need special help.
Me neither, Your Honor.
Special help. And there is a phrase running through the briefing and the opinion below, and even the earlier Dell Dot opinion that troubles me, and that's the, quote, fair play concerns, close quote. There's some suggestion here that the Julian bid, because it was initially non-responsive but then supplemented at a later time, would give rise under fair play concerns for a special advantage for them over other bidders. Is that in play here? I don't mean that to be a bad pun, but is the fair play concern at issue here?
No, it's not, because of the previous holdings in Bader by this court. It's the exact same situation where a bid was made that lacked a certificate, that was not statutorily required, just as here, and then the bidder remedied that by handing the certificate late. They gave no reason, it was just late, and then they got awarded the contract.
Can I interrupt you?
Of course, Your Honor.
I'm having some of the same problems that apparently Justice Holland is having. If I understand you, you're saying Julian submitted a bid, it didn't have the painting certificate, whether it was required to have one or not, that was deemed to be a flaw, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And Julian immediately, within a matter of days, submitted the required certificate. The certificate had nothing to do with what was being done on the job, therefore this kind of minor failure to comply should not throw the bid out. Is
correct.
That more or less it?
Correct.
Okay. So let's assume you're right. The fact that it didn't have a painting certificate should not have made the bid unacceptable. What about the steel issue?
Well, you never get to the steel issue because they would have been awarded the bid and should have been awarded the bid. Had that arisen...
Wait a second. If the bid is unacceptable because it's lacking a permit, and it's also unacceptable because it uses replacement of steel instead of repainting of steel, those are two separate reasons why this bid is no good, right?
I would argue that it's good even if it lacks both of those. But
all right, well, tell me what we do with this. You know, we're reviewing a decision that you would like reversed.
Correct.
So paragraph 7 of the Court of Chancery order says this: Julian's failure to submit a bid contemplating the refurbishing and reuse of the existing steel girders makes it unnecessary to reach the question of whether the Department of Transportation could reject the bid solely on the failure to submit a painting certificate. The way I read that, the Court of Chancery is saying, I'm deciding this because Julian didn't comply with the steel component, and I don't have to get to the painting certificate. Is that the way you read it?
It is. And Your Honor, the thing about that sentence is it's misleading and goes against prior precedent in the state. Because the...
Well, I don't... That's great. But you have to show us that in your brief. I've looked at your brief again, and I look at your first argument, and it says merits of the argument. Because the certificates were not mandated by the statute, the bid was responsive, and fulfillment of the public purpose required award of the contract to Julian. So the centerpiece of your brief is still this certificate. The centerpiece of the Court of Chancery's holding is steel.
And I agree with Your Honor. And I'm concerned that Your Honor is you're both smarter men than I, Vice Chancellor Laster and yourself, are getting caught up in this new steel issue that should have never been raised by the court in the first place. Because this certificate that we admittedly did not submit should be the end of that discussion. Because, one, the amount of new steel isn't an independent reason. Two, this certificate, had they given the award to JGID as they should have, they never would have gotten to the new steel rejection argument.
One thing that's been troubling me about this case is were there actual factual findings about the significance of new steel as opposed to refurbishing old steel? It's referred to as material. Well, maybe it's what's called for in the bid, but it's counterintuitive to me. If somebody submits the low bid but replaces old steel with brand new steel as an alternative to refurbishing old steel, and yet comes in with the lowest bid. And that's like my car fender being replaced after an accident with taking the dents out and repainting it as opposed to putting a new brand new fender on it. I just don't get that. Were there factual findings that overwhelm the counterintuitiveness of that finding of materiality?
I agree with Your Honor completely. There were, but they were not made available to the bidders until after the fact. DelDOT then brought up their conversations with Amtrak that had taken place months before. There was nothing in these bid documents that said that. And JJID thought the same thing as Your Honor and said, this makes no sense. The beams are going to be the same size, same structural integrity, just new. Why not do that? Further, they contemplate...
Wait a second, what was the answer?
Yes, but they weren't made aware to any of the bidders. These were side conversations between Amtrak and DelDOT prior to any bidding.
Well, I read that, and I share my colleague's concerns. That doesn't seem to make any sense. You came in with the lowest bid with new steel, and the answer I read in the record is, well, that's all well and good, but all these other bidders who were bidding on old steel came in higher, and if they'd have would have figured out they could have submitted new steel, they might have been lower too. But since we didn't give everybody a quote fair playing field, we're taking the higher bid with the old steel.
I disagree, because
now, that was intended to be a very friendly question.
I apologize.
You want to agree with that one?
I agree, Your Honor. And the reason what happened is we bid more on the new steel than everyone else bid on refurbishing the old steel. So it's costing JGID more to completely replace the steel than it's costing the other companies to refurbish it. So we didn't save any money on that. In essence, that made our bid more expensive.
But the state saved money because you were the low bidder.
Correct. And the state would save $700,000 by awarding us the bid. And even after the fact, which my point on the new steel shouldn't have been a factor, after the bid should have been awarded because of this pain certificate that they deemed material, which clearly wasn't, as the lower court then went on to say in paragraph 7, there's then a meeting 2 months later where we would have, these things would have been discussed, and had they said, well, we want you to refurbish the steel, we would have said okay, and there's precedent for that in the, forgive me.
But what is the entire court missing? Why would the state ever say, we don't want new, we want you to refurbish the old? What is the logic for that?
I believe that's an Amtrak detail that was not shared with the bidders. The logic behind it is unknown to me, Your Honor.
That was my original question, exactly what Justice Holland was asking there. Isn't there somewhere a finding in the record that would allow the Vice Chancellor to conclude that it was material? Is it simply material simply because it's stated in the specifications? Or is it material because it indeed is important to being able to offer a rational bid and complete the project in a way that would satisfy safety and durability and all the other concerns we hope for in bridge construction?
Your Honor, I'm into my spare time, but the short answer of it is...
Well, your time is not spare. It's our time.
Excuse me, Your Honor. My answer to that is it makes no sense. Clearly, a new steel bridge is more structurally sound and safe than an old steel bridge that's 100 years old.
Intuitively, yes, but not clearly, because the record doesn't answer the question about how that can be a basis for a finding of materiality.
I don't believe,
you're telling me it's
I don't believe it can.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have a little over 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Frederick Schrank. I am a Deputy Attorney General, and I represent the Department of Transportation and have for many years. As you can tell from some of the case citations that were presented to you in the briefing. And although Your Honor has said that he has had limited experience with this, I do know of at least one case in Chancery Court where Your Honor issued a decision regarding a Delaware DOT bid dispute relating to unbalanced bidding.
Can you just real quickly
go to
the question that we were all asking at the end of the last argument?
About why?
Which is what explanation is there for saying we have to have refurbished steel instead of new steel?
Yes, sir.
Because it is somewhat counterintuitive.
It is until you understand how signs are done and what you have to do to get Amtrak to agree to what has to happen here. The Moeller affidavit that was provided in the post-argument memoranda submissions that were asked by the court, because the court focused on the steel issue after dealing with the painting certificate issue in the oral argument, and they asked for additional documentation and backup for the argument relating to that, because there had been references to this requirement, the steel requirement, in the pre-bid announcements to the bidders. It was in the obviously in the specs for the thing, and there had been some prior references, but they asked for more information and an explanation. Moeller was the engineer responsible for overseeing the design, and as the records are in front of you,
what does his affidavit say?
His affidavit says that you had a 57 feet 4.5 inch steel girder spam structure with existing steel that Amtrak agreed they could, as long as they continued to use that steel, and it was found to be useful and available for that purpose once refurbished, they would not have to build a bigger bridge. They would not have to build brand new structures to hold those girders that would be larger than this. They would not have to meet new standards about the size and the dimensions of new girders that would involve a whole new bridge design of significant size and differentiation.
Let me interrupt you.
Yes, ma'am.
Am I correct in saying that this is more or less like a grandfather clause in a zoning or housing requirements, that the bridge in its current condition would not be acceptable if you were building a new one like that? So if you're building a new one, you'd have to do larger spans or steel or whatever.
Yes, sir.
And that because of that, it was significant that this steel remain in place and only be refurbished instead of replaced?
Yes, Your Honor.
So if they replaced it, they would have to go to the higher standards that are currently required?
Yes, Your Honor, and that was pointed out in the Mueller affidavit that was provided to the Vice Chancellor.
Let me ask the same question in a slightly different way.
Yes, sir.
In, we'll say, commercial construction, sometimes if you remodel a bathroom, this is just, we'll call it a hypothetical, but
okay.
You can remodel it without making the bathroom handicap accessible. But if you build a new bathroom, you have to make it handicap accessible. So by analogy, what was going on here was that if you refurbish the bridge, you don't have to do a lot of other things.
That's
but if
correct.
You do something that constitutes new construction, you have to do the rest.
It's not a bad analogy for the situation, Your Honor. This was not a matter that DLDOT was in control of the matter. It was a matter they had to work with Amtrak on, because the state's providing the money for the upgrade. The state wants the rail line to be there, but it's Amtrak's track, and you have to meet Amtrak standards. And as the 07 minutes of those discussions took place, that are referred to and copied to the Mueller affidavit, that's the kind of issue that they addressed. We would have to go to a whole other standard for what would be built, a very bit different structure, and both Amtrak and the state were comfortable with rehabilitating this existing steel as long as it was done right.
Your colleagues suggest that that information that you just gave us, which does, for the first time, at least in my mind, provide an answer to why this may have been a material specification.
Yes, sir.
But he says the bidders weren't aware of that. This was a side discussion that took place simply off, in effect, off the bidding record, if that's an appropriate phrase, between Amtrak and DLDOT. But the bidders didn't know
for the
purpose of structuring their bid that there was that significant difference between refurbishment and new steel.
Well, Your Honor, that may adequately explain the difference between what is called a design-build contract in those contexts in which the contractor also does the design work, and a case like this where the state oversees the work of preparing the design, prepares and presents the design and its specifications and what's to be done to the bidders, who then agree to do it according to that design.
It doesn't matter that the bidders didn't know that this was a significant issue.
The only reason that they would know that it was an issue is by looking at the hundreds of pages of design and the pages specified by the Vice Chancellor that indicated clearly that they were going to have to rehabilitate the existing steel. There was no provision for the use of new steel.
No. What I'm saying is, if we understand you correctly, there was a valid reason why refurbishing was the only way that was going to be acceptable.
That's correct.
Okay. But none of the bidders knew that, right?
None raised the issue,
okay.
No.
Okay. But, all right, so none of the bidders know that it's important to Amtrak and the state that there only be refurbishing and not replacement.
Only by inference, Your Honor,
and
yes.
And it doesn't matter whether they knew or not, because they were required to put in a bid that matched what was requested.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if somebody thought, hey, I can do even better than just refurbishing this, and it may even cost me less money to do it, I'll just put in new steel. Bidders know that they can't just make their own changes, even if they think that those are improvements, that they can't change what's in the bid plan.
Sure.
When they submit something.
There are two opportunities for them to do something about that if they thought of it. The first is to make a suggestion to the department, which was pointed out in the pre-bid meeting minutes that were also in the record, that if you had a different idea about how to do any part of this job, let us know, and if we agree with it, we'll put an addendum to the contract that it gives you and everybody else the opportunity to bid according to that new methodology, that new approach. That didn't happen here. The second option is bid according to what's in the package. Bid it exactly as it's going to do. Then, if you are the contractor, the person who's executed the contract, under our standard specifications, you can then provide what's called a value engineering proposal, VEP for short. I live in an acronym-filled life. And in that process, you could, for instance, suggest, we'll provide new steel here. And if you could get that past Amtrak, you know, and everybody else is pursuing the matter from a design perspective, then the state and the contractor would then share equally in the savings. What wasn't done here, and this is the fair play consideration that Your Honor raised, is neither of those things occurred here. They didn't tell us they were coming in with new steel. They didn't provide us with the opportunity to even consider the notion of using new steel, even though 4 years before, the department and Amtrak had clearly decided they weren't going to use new steel. They didn't provide that opportunity at that time before the bid. And since that was the case, the only people who can present a value engineering proposal are those who get the contract. And that VEP specification clearly says that's not up to bidders to do it. That's up to the person who got the contract to do it at that time, but they didn't get there.
I think I understand part of Julian's argument to be to this effect, that this painting certificate was just immaterial and that the bid was rejected because of the painting certificate, mm-hmm. and that should have never happened. And if the painting certificate was not an issue, they would have gotten the bid because they were the low bidder. Then, once they had the bid, you would have looked at this and said, oh, you know, you've got new steel in here. You can't use new steel. You've got to refurbish it. And they would have said, fine, because it saves us money anyway. They're still the low bidder. So their theory is that this refurbishing new steel discussion could have taken place after the contract had been properly awarded to them. Where did they go wrong with that argument?
They went wrong because, though the initial decision to toss the bid was based on the lack of providing certificates that warned them twice that if they didn't provide them, they would be tossed. When they came back with that initial determination and said, you're tossed because of this, then Julian came back and said, but we weren't even going to use this. We were going to use new steel. And they said that in their subsequent bid appeal documentation, which raised a whole other issue for the department at that point. Well, we never said you could. You didn't bid the job according to the specs. There's no way to fix that. So they were tossed for that reason as well.
Can I read between the lines?
Yes.
And conclude that when the first bids were looked at and they got to the point of, okay, where's the bid, the paint certificate? No paint certificate. We're not even going to look at what's in here.
At
for
that
this
point.
Bid, so nobody even noticed that there was a steel problem as well?
There's no easy way to tell that they were going to use new steel in the spec, in their bid package, until they told us that that's what they were going to do.
So
they did bid $1,000 for it. Excuse me.
Going back to my question, then your position is the paint certificate issue was waived when they submitted the new bid.
I'm not sure what you mean by waived.
Well, they can't say you should have never asked us for the paint certificate in the first place and rejected our bid because we submitted a subsequent bid. Is that correct?
After bid opening, you're not supposed to negotiate. You're not supposed to promise to do something even though we clearly knew you didn't do it right the first time. That was the Kuhn case and a couple others that we cited to you in our briefing. That when you open a bid, you're supposed to take the bid as it is. And they had a fatal flaw in theirs, as the department initially understood it. It became even more fatal as the vice chancellor recognized it when all the new steel issues came up. And so there wasn't a whole lot there to do. After that, just saying, well, we'll do it the right way now, trust us, is not an option really available to the state at that point. That's not fair to the rest of the bidding community.
Can I?
Or to the state.
Fair play concern?
That's correct.
Because everybody else bid exactly as the specifications required.
Yes.
And Julian did not. It would not be fair to turn to Julian simply because it was the lowest bid, negotiate with them.
Yes, sir.
Have them get it right because everybody else did it right in the first place.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, as Your Honor is well aware from your own experience, the bid laws for Delaware are not simply a matter of low money. There are a host of policy considerations buried in the legislation relating to public bidding that deal with matters far different than money and, in fact, have monetary consequences that go beyond low bid.
Can I get back to a factual issue here?
Yes.
I suggested, based upon what I was hearing, that when the bid came in from Julian and it didn't have the paint certificate, nobody really looked at the entire bid package because they were already out. And therefore, nobody noticed that it called for new steel instead of refurbishing steel. Your response to that was that you couldn't tell from the submission whether it was new steel or refurbished steel. How is that possible?
Because, Your Honor, the only thing they provided with the bid at that point is a list of prices to go with each of the respective items. And they bid $1,000 for this item. It didn't say in parens after that, oh, by the way, it's a new steel item. They didn't come up with the explanation for why this bid was the way it was until the state made the initial determination that it was fatally flawed for failure to provide that certificate. When Julian wrote back and appealed it, at that point the department learned for the first time that Julian had not even tried to comply with the contract terms by bidding new steel. And that became an alternative ground cited by Mr. Hoagland in his appeal determination during the bid appeal process before we went to Chancery Court.
So just explain to us how that works.
Sure.
In our court, the record's closed and you don't expand the record except in limited circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But based on what you just told me,
mm-hmm.
the bid was rejected because it had no paint certificate. An appeal was taken. And during the course of the appeal, it became known that there was also the problem with new steel.
Right.
So on appeal, the basis for rejecting the bid, instead of being just the paint certificate, became the paint certificate and the new steel.
Yes, Your Honor. It's a fact you couldn't ignore, especially when Julian came to the department on its initial appeal and said, well, no, we didn't comply with that, but the reason we didn't comply was because we were going to use new steel that wouldn't involve the use of that certificate, that wouldn't involve the use of that specification calling for that highly technical form of painting.
So the appeal person said, well, your defense happens to be an independent basis for rejecting your bid.
That's correct. And it was even, and at least as Vice Chancellor reviewed it, it was even more fatal to their bid than the original problem.
But that scenario we just went through,
yes.
is the way records are made in these bid cases.
That's right.
Did the Vice Chancellor know what you've told us about the materiality of the new steel versus refurbishment?
Yes, Your Honor. We provided the Mueller affidavit. He raised the issue during the oral argument, and then we provided the Mueller affidavit, which gave that full explanation, including the impacts of not doing it the right way, in the post-oral argument submissions in early January of this year.
Well, I may misunderstand Mr. Green's argument, but he can set me straight in rebuttal. But there's one last issue in my mind that they have raised that I'd like you to address. It goes, as I understand it, along these lines. Okay, you've got to take into consideration the fact that this issue of new steel versus refurbishment is such a de minimis part of the contract. It should be meaningless in light of the $700,000 savings that our bid provides to the state of Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
Easily corrected, we simply switch from new steel to refurbishment and it doesn't change our bid. And in the overall project, it doesn't mean a thing. And that there's no real fair play concern here because none of the bidders knew that there was a significant or material difference at the time they issued their bid response or their response to the proposal, whatever the right terminology is. You know it, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything to that argument?
No,
if not, why not?
Everything in the bid package said you're going to be refurbishing the steel. Everything in this bid package said you're going to have to do, as part of that, you're going to have to do this specialized painting to remove the materials that are there and clean them up and put them back. If the state then accepted the notion that someone said, well, we're going to use new steel, and you won't have to do with all that. We have no guarantee at all that the other bidders could not have underbid Julian. If they had known, they would have had that opportunity. That $700,000 differential is a chimera. It does not necessarily exist. There is no way for the state to look at what the other bidders are doing and say, well, if you knew we were going to be okay with the new steel, what would you do differently in your bid? Because everybody else bid the job as spec'd. Everybody else bid the job knowing that they'd have to go through this process of cleaning and rehabilitating that girder. If they knew they didn't have to do that, they could have revisited their entire bid and figured out, maybe we could also do it for with new steel, and maybe we could do it for even cheaper than Julian's bidding it. And that's where, that's the problem with procurement law in general and bidding law in general. You have to take your bid as you see it, and you cannot get into an endless regurgitation of how it should be done if I only did it differently. You have opportunities to do that before bidding, to tell us about your opportunities. They didn't do that. You have the opportunity to take advantage of it and pass on some of those savings to us in a value engineering proposal. But at the point of opening the bid, you're supposed to bid it as bid. You're not supposed to come in and say, well, we didn't, well, okay, fine, we'll do it your way because our bid is so much lower. But we have no way of knowing that the other bidders couldn't have bid the job even cheaper. It's similar to the Beaver Blacktop case that we cited in the briefs, that in which the bidder came in 14 minutes late, and then his prices were in fact lower, or he said they would be lower, but they weren't open because he came in late. And one of the issues that was addressed by then Chancellor Allen was, well, another problem with the case was the state had changed the bid opening dates, and they hadn't told everybody. They hadn't gone out and re-announced it. They just told the people who had picked up the package. And the problem was there was the phantom bidder out there, some other person who, if they had known the bid was going to be reopened 8 weeks later than the original date, they might have had enough time to do the bid. And so there was another bidder potentially out there. And he saw that as a large problem for the state. That's since been addressed in the way the projects are run now. But in that sense, it's the same problem here. You don't know. Having changed the universe of bidding to accommodate their newfound interest in using new steel, that the other bidders couldn't have done an even better job of bidding the job. And so that $700,000 is not really $700,000.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
There are a couple things I'd like to touch on that I didn't get to before, and I think have some materiality with what the court is driving at. This new steel issue, old steel issue, it's less than 1% of this entire project. So right off the bat, according to case law, anything less than 2% under the furnace electric case can kind of be dealt with aside. It's immaterial, and if you're saving the taxpayer money, we can fix it later on. Under Bader, they say a slight variance from the specifications for the bids does not destroy competitive character and require rejection. That's what both of these things are, and
does
they're both
competitive character go to the fair play concern issue?
I believe it's the same thing, Your Honor. And to destroy the competitive nature, it must be substantial, and to be substantial, it must affect the amount of the bid. We're talking about $700,000. This new steel proposal was going to cost JGID more than refurbishing. So under no circumstance can it have said to cost, you know, the $680,000 to lose the bid. Even if it cost $500,000 to later say, all right, we'll refurbish it, we're still the low bidder by $200,000.
Well, would it be fair to say that from Julian's perspective, they looked at the total package, they decided that we'll use new steel instead of refurbished steel, it'll be better anyhow, and it's only a very tiny portion of the whole bid. So even if we are varying from the terms of the bid documents, it'll be no problem because it's so small. So basically, Julian took the risk by not following what was requested and sort of saying, I know how this works. This is so small, it won't matter. But it turns out that maybe it wasn't so small because it had to do with a larger picture of, you know, the idea of remodeling versus rebuilding.
But it is still small compared to the entire project. It's still less than 1%.
I think Justice Berger's point, though she's more than capable of speaking for herself, is the larger issue is this dysfunctional connection with Amtrak. Amtrak would not have approved it. It would have required arguably many more dollars to comply with their standards if you use new steel.
The risk that JJID took was not submitting the painting certificate that it had. Had they shut their mouth when confronted by DelDOT and said, hey, forgot a certificate, and just handed it in, we wouldn't be here. We would have gotten the job.
But you take Justice Berger and my point, I think, that it's not a matter of whether the steel and the refurbishment difference in price was less than 2% of the bid. It was if you use steel, new steel, there were implications in a much broader sense for this project cost going out of control in order to satisfy Amtrak.
But we should be allowed to cure that, as we did, by just saying, all right, fine, we'll do what you want us to do, because that's what the Furnace Electric case says. We screwed up, but we'll fix it for less.
All right, thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. Recess.
Please rise.